two top countries that are generating concerns are China and North Korea for very different reasons.
Looking at new and familiar stories for Asia at the start of 2019, it's Tuesday, January 1st. Happy New Year. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, legal marijuana in Thailand, the U.S.-China relationship in 2018, Afghanistan's challenges, high-tech glasses, junkyard empires. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The new year brings new issues for Asia to confront, along with many from the past year and even older. VOA Asia's Doug Bernard helps us to ring in 2019 with Dr. Denny Roy of the East-West Center in Hawaii. They discuss the departure of the U.S. Defense Secretary and what General Mattis' resignation may foretell in East Asia, along with the challenges of protecting U.S. interests in the region. Dr. Roy starts us off with the nations involved in the largest stories we can expect to follow.
Well, obviously, the two top countries that are generating concerns are China and North Korea for very different reasons and with different levels of complexity. With North Korea, it's mostly the single issue as far as the U.S. is concerned about the nuclear weapons program, but it creates a lot of complicated obligations and the perception of a lack of fulfilling of those obligations between the United States and many of its partners in the region. With China, the big picture is China perhaps rivaling the United States as a leader in the region and as perhaps the sponsor of an alternative set of rules for international interactions, different from the one that the United States has been a key sponsor of in the post-war period.
I suppose to accomplish that, part of what China might need is for the United States in some ways to, if not fully withdraw, then to pull back from trying to exert influence in the region. With General Mattis stepping down now as Secretary of Defense, and he was very interested in East Asia and the Pacific, what do you think that may foretell?
Well, from the point of view of U.S. friends in the region, in a word, it's unpredictability in terms of U.S. foreign policy, and that unpredictability might go in either direction from their point of view. That is, too much or too little. Too much would be, from their point of view, the United States picking fights with, say, China unnecessarily, or on the other hand, the United States withdrawing too much from the region and not playing a sufficient role in helping to balance against their fear of Chinese domination.
Part of, it seems, what led to General Mattis' resignation was the president's new policy with regard to Syria. How much concern do you think there may be among U.S. allies in the East Asia region regarding, you know, the United States perhaps sometime just, you know, perhaps making some kind of precipitous withdrawal or pulling out of longstanding agreements regarding defense and mutual cooperation?
Well, the job of the United States reassuring U.S. friends and allies in the region is an endless one, even in times where there's relatively little expression from Washington about any interest in doing this. But with the Trump administration, we have a questioning of what have been some of the basic core principles of U.S. having a global and internationalist and forward deployed strategy in Asia. So naturally, the concerns have increased, and the departure of General Mattis feeds into these fears.
Part of what President Trump has said is that he wants, speaking about the Middle East, he wants some of the parties at play there to share more of the financial burden, to actually pony up some money for their defense and get involved in some of the fighting. Do you think that he may try to bring that same ethos to East Asia? And if so, because it is so diverse and so fraught, what do you think the response might be from East Asian leaders?
Well, there's little question that President Trump is inclined in the direction of asking U.S. partners in East Asia to do more for their own defense. We saw many, many statements to this effect during the campaign. So there would seem to be a reasonable fear on the part of U.S. friends in the region that the United States might increasingly move closer in this direction. As to the effect on the region, some would actually advocate this, arguing that if the United States pulls back, that there would be less tension in the region. Certainly there would be less U.S.-China tension. But the question and the real issue is, would, in that case, U.S.-China tension be replaced by tensions between China and some of its neighbors? China has lots of very difficult strategic disputes with lots of its neighbors, and the result might be equally bad for those who live in the region.
Finally, there's many areas of policy we haven't covered, but I'm just wondering, as we look forward to 2019, anything that you might be wanting to add that we should keep our eyes out for?
Well, contrary to what some people say, the North Korea nuclear crisis is not settled. It's in kind of a hiatus, but it may well revive sometime in 2019, as there doesn't seem to be substantial progress in terms of the core U.S. interest in solving that problem on U.S. terms.
It seems to be the endless problem that never, ever fully gets resolved.
Unfortunately.
Dr. Roy, thank you so much for the time today.
You're welcome. Happy New Year.
Dr. Denny Roy of the East-West Center in Hawaii speaking with VOA Asia's Doug Bernard. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China's Xi in New Year's address says pace of reform won't stagnate. Deadly bombing in southern Philippines. Kim Jong-un expected to ring in 2019 with big policy speech. Philippines aims to attract investors hit by tariffs in Sino-U.S. trade war. Trump trying to reset relationship with China. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. And we also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue now with VOA Asia. Thailand, known for its tough anti-drug trafficking efforts, made history this month as Southeast Asia's first country to legalize medical marijuana. Steve Sanford reports on the traditions and new developments in the kingdom.
Here in northern Thailand, the cultivation of special herbs for personal use is something of a tradition. Thai marijuana buds were in huge demand, with illegal exports heading to North America since the 1970s. But cannabis as a treatment for pain and depression has long been practiced and is a popular herb for consumers like Ong, who prefer just using his first name.
My relative, who wants to use marijuana as a medicine, calls me because traditional Thai doctors who want to use cannabis don't know where to find it because they don't smoke it. So I help them to find it to make useful medicines.
The government pharmaceutical organization is already working on strain selection, breed improvement, cultivation, and harvesting. As the new year rolls in, the Homegrown Institute will be tackling some major diseases using extracts from the plant.
In the first year, we want to make a clinical research for condition so that seizure in childhood, epilepsy, and intractable pain, and multiple sclerosis, and the side effect from anti-cancer chemotherapy.
While optimism is still at a high, some experts are concerned about future problems arising from competing economic interests.
Whenever profit from distributing substance to the public is outweighed the harm from the substance, then it's very difficult to control the negative impact. Alcohol would be a good example. If we not concerned about this and allow cannabis to be commercialized to serve the profit for private enterprise, I think we are going to end up similar condition as alcohol problem around the world.
With global profits projected to reach more than $20 billion by 2022, a cloud of uncertainty remains on Thailand's bid to enter the race. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, President Xi Jinping said in his New Year's message that China's pace of reforms will not stagnate and its door will open wider and wider. He also warned of challenges ahead. Xi has repeatedly pledged his support for reform this year as China marks 40 years since landmark economic reforms. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new year. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. The relationship between the United States and China has grown increasingly tense since June, when Washington slapped tariffs on key imports from Beijing and China returned the gesture. The Trump administration says it is trying to reset the country's economic and strategic relationship with China to put America first. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara reports on how the administration has confronted China in 2018.
Beijing's hardware on display at a recent air show. Though the United States still tops the world's military expenditures, China has been on a spending spree.
China has increased its military spending for the 29th consecutive year. They are the second largest spender in the world at around $228 billion.
Earlier in his term, President Donald Trump sought to cultivate ties with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping to try to curb North Korea's nuclear program. A few weeks after the historic U.S.-North Korea summit, the U.S. slapped the first tariffs on China, accusing them of unfair trade practices and stealing intellectual property. Beijing retaliated with its own tariffs.
The focus, really, of this year has been on trade, and it has become really the litmus test of whether or not this relationship is going to be sound going forward or is going to move in an even more contentious direction.
Also of concern to Washington, preserving freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. A near collision between the two countries' warships in October highlighted the potential for conflict.
What the United States is really worried about is what's China's intent, and in a crisis, what might China do with these growing military capabilities that it has throughout the region.
Another worry, China's massive foreign investment strategy, the Belt and Road Initiative.
More and more Chinese are coming to Vietnam. It's like an invasion.
Over $1 trillion of Chinese funding will help connect almost 70 countries, solidifying Beijing's influence on 62% of the world's population.
It would be better if we can speak Mandarin, because businesses these days rely on China.
To compete, in October, the U.S. created an agency to facilitate $60 billion in private lending for projects in developing nations. In the same month, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence accused Beijing of trying to interfere in U.S. domestic politics and said the Trump administration is adopting a new strategy
to reset America's economic and strategic relationship with China. Americans stand strong behind a president that's putting America first.
At the G20 summit, Trump and Xi agreed to a 90-day trade truce. Since then, China has reduced tariffs on American auto imports. But in December, Beijing signaled it will not back down.
We should have the tenacity, which is like leaving your handprint on a piece of iron when you clutch it, and leaving your footprint on a stone when you step onto it.
While trade talks simmer, the Trump administration continues to push against what it calls Beijing state-sponsored hacking to take over global leadership and technology, indicating the U.S. has no intention to curb its broadside against China in the new year. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, at the White House.
Coming up, we revisit a tumultuous year for Afghanistan. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia. Two people are dead after a bomb went off at the entrance of a shopping mall in the southern Philippines. More than two dozen others were wounded in the attack in the city. Police later discovered a second bomb that had not detonated in another part of the mall. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, 2018 was a tough year for Afghanistan, but there is a renewed push and newfound hopes that the start of a dialogue with the Taliban may be in sight. The U.S. increased its air campaign in the country, leading to a rise in civilian casualties, but the Taliban gained territory. Meanwhile, the United States has started directly engaging the Taliban and regional countries to start a reconciliation process. Ayesha Tanzim takes us through the ups and downs of Afghanistan in 2018.
The year started with a devastating wave of violence. A January attack on one of the city's premier hotels left dozens dead, including 14 foreigners. Days later, a Taliban attacker blew up an ambulance packed with explosives on a crowded street, killing at least 95. The attacks in the heart of the capital were one indication that a surge in American troops in the country to 14,000 from less than 10,000 last year had not helped. Civilians continued to die in record numbers, according to the United Nations. Afghan security forces' casualties were unsustainable, according to American generals. 12 Americans died in action. The first pause in violence in the 17-year-old war came in June when Ghani offered 8 days of unilateral ceasefire to the Taliban. The Taliban reciprocated for 3 out of the 8 days, which coincided with the holy Muslim festival Eid al-Fitr. Unprecedented scenes of militants mingling with Afghan civilians, taking selfies and smiling at Afghan security personnel flooded social media, raising expectations of a major breakthrough.
Our leaders have ordered a 3-day ceasefire. We want a permanent ceasefire to resolve all our issues.
Then, in a major development over the summer, America reversed its long-standing policy. Senior U.S. diplomat Alice Wells held a face-to-face meeting with Taliban. It was followed by U.S. President Donald Trump officially nominating Zalmay Khalilzad to negotiate with all parties, including the Taliban.
The end state that I envisage for Afghanistan will be an Afghanistan that is at peace, an Afghanistan that's successful, an Afghanistan that doesn't pose a threat to itself, meaning there is peace among Afghans, and an Afghanistan that doesn't pose a threat to the international community, and since I represent the United States, particularly to the United States.
Khalilzad has since made 3 trips to the region. The Taliban have welcomed the development, but the contacts did little to reduce the violence. Taliban attacks left hundreds dead on both sides. Meanwhile, another group, Islamic State, continued attacking targets in Nangarhar province and Kabul city throughout the year. In between, the country held its long overdue parliamentary elections. Women came out in droves to vote despite threats. The year ended with a hope that negotiations with the Taliban may yield some result next year. Ayesha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
This news from VOA Asia, the Philippines is seeking to attract foreign investment in part because of its $169 billion infrastructure renewal push. The rebuilding is set to run through 2022 and get funding partly by money from China and Japan. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, some 1.3 billion people live with some form of vision impairment. That's according to the World Health Organization. A team of innovators at an Israeli technology company has developed a small device to help them. As Laura Sepulveda reports from Jerusalem, the device connects to regular glasses and helps people with visual limitations identify people and products and read in more than 14 languages.
The OrCam may look like a Bluetooth earpiece, but it does so much more. As this promotional video shows, it speaks.
10 Park Street.
So the visually impaired can identify products, recognize faces, and read text, just by pointing.
So it's a camera on one side and a speaker on the other side.
And actually, we have chosen a very strategic place on our face, which is the arm of the eyeglasses. You just click it like this. It looks forward all the time. It helps to visually impaired and blind people to their daily activities.
Saif Aviram, Orkam's president and co-founder, says one of the challenges the creators faced was how to build a good interface between the user and the gadget.
And we came to the conclusion that just showing the finger will be the most natural and the most intuitive way to operate the device. Otherwise, it will talk to you all the time. So you want, only when you want to know what is in front of you, the device will start to talk to you.
And since one of the benefits that this product has is recognizing faces, we're going to see if this one recognizes.
No one.
Unlike many high-tech devices, the Orkam is not connected to the internet, so people's personal information is protected. Aviram says it has enough memory to store all the data it needs to recognize faces and products.
The products that we have, it's a database of barcodes that we install at the product. So actually we have enough memory to know everything.
The company says its contribution to the wearable assistive technology field could help the millions of people around the world who are partially blind or who have reading difficulties. Laura Sepúlveda, for VOA News, Jerusalem, Israel.
A father-son business in Damascus, Maryland, is achieving success by restoring old, rusty cars into magnificent-looking vehicles. This is thanks to the work and inspiration of Bobby and Andy Cohen, who are featured in a multi-season television show called Junkyard Empire. Maximus Kalkov filed this report for VOA.
5,000 square meters of old damaged cars, motorcycles, and boats fill this junkyard. For a casual onlooker, this might be a very sad sight. But for Andy Cohen, it's a real treasure.
I've been a junk hoarder for my whole life, so I like different things. I like fixing up stuff that shouldn't be thrown away.
Around 200 old cars end up in this junkyard every week. Some of them are sold for parts, others get repaired, still others are beyond repair. Andy's father, Bobby, started the business some 50 years ago and still spends every morning there.
What I liked about the business, it was always a lot of fun. It's a lot harder now. Things are a lot more competitive. And the internet has really taken a toll on us. You come in with a smile every day and hopefully somebody else will smile.
The father and son have very different approaches to their work.
So we got a London cab that was getting thrown away, and that was my father's project. And that was one I did not want him to do. He did basically the opposite of everything I told him, and I think he just did it just to make me mad, because he dumped a ton of money into this car, and in the end, it wouldn't run.
The unusual family business attracted the attention of a TV crew. That's how the show about the Coins, Junkyard Empire, came to be featured on a subsidiary network of the Discovery Channel.
In my world, there's no idea too crazy. My empire.
5 years of shooting, 5 seasons, 60 episodes. This show about old rusty cars is popular all over the world.
And there's hundreds of junkyards throughout the United States. I think what's interesting is that it's a family business. My father and I started the business, and we banter very well back and forth. And I think that's what people like. They can relate to it.
The cars that end up at the Coins junkyard hold endless surprises, and every one of them can get a second chance.
And this was a salvage car, which was a junk car. Andy bought, and we fully restored it with a blown motor.
Andy Cohen restored this unique car himself. Yet he doesn't get a chance to ride around in it too often, because despite its sleek look, the roar of the engine is truly deafening, and he worries his neighbors will not put up with the noise. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Damascus, Maryland.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We start off the new year by presenting our program in many familiar places, like online at iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll also find us at our website, voanews.com, and streaming every day on our Facebook page. That's VOA Asia. You'll also find us on another Facebook page. That's VOA Burmese. We say hello to everybody in Myanmar who is listening to our program today. Thanks for joining us. We send our thanks out to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.